The tape that you are about to hear has been declassified by disability and disadvantage analysts at CFMU Radio. This taped record of conversation had never been heard before being released to you, the CFMU listener. This tape has been condensed and edited from live, personal, or telephone conversation. You will hear privileged discussions, damning indictments, and stark revelations. Once known collectively only to the agents intercepting them, these files have been tagged with the distinct identifier, disrespect. Today, 2 days before myalgic encephalomyelitis, fibromyalgia, and multiple chemical sensitivities day, May the 12th, disrespect had a little technical and operator difficulty with the first interview. It's been shortened so that the difficulty we had isn't the difficulty you'll hear listening to it. Nevertheless, Dr. Alison Bested, probably one of Canada's foremost clinicians with ME and fibromyalgia and multiple chemical sensitivities, has been generous enough to share her time. We have a further interview with Katie, bikechick06.blogspot.ca, rituximab tourist, who's going to talk to us about her experiences on the high-tech side of treating chronic fatigue. For now, Alison Bested. Disrespect welcomes to the show Dr. Alison Bested, an expert in treating chronic fatigue syndrome and involved in the research in Toronto. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You were explaining to me it wasn't always to do with Chronic Fatigue Day. It had another name.
May the 12th was the neuroimmune endocrine day. And in Canada, we've adapted it to basically be the International Day of Awareness for ME, which stands for myalgic encephalomyelitis, which is the preferred name for chronic fatigue syndrome. So it includes FM and multiple chemical sensitivities. And it's celebrated on May the 12th as a way to commemorate Florence Nightingale, who was thought to have suffered from myalgic encephalomyelitis for many years.
Yeah, it's interesting you would mention that. I volunteered for a year under one of her great, I don't know how many greats, relatives, and who also has chronic fatigue syndrome.
Interesting.
Yes. Couldn't get her family genealogist to talk about it. I didn't know that was her birthday. Now, how did it become? Do you know how it became specific to this family of illnesses?
I think it was initially like an umbrella idea to cover complex medical illnesses, I think, the patient population.
Okay. So now we have this 20th year, don't we, of
yes.
this day?
Yes.
Is it the 20th year under that name?
That's correct, yeah. It's as common as heart disease. ME as an illness has been around since the beginning of recorded time. It's actually been recorded in the Ebers Papyrus.
Oh.
So this is not a new illness.
Right.
It's newly recognized again in medicine. And,
okay.
And often complex illnesses come and go in the medical literature.
Really?
I think that there have been numerous outbreaks of ME around the world that are well documented in the medical literature. And the CDC got on board with the Lake Tahoe outbreak.
Right.
And they decided to call it chronic fatigue syndrome and have regretted it ever since, according to the doctors on that panel. So now the push is going back towards the terminology myalgic encephalomyelitis, and I think it's gradually switching back over because they've recognized that this term is has been in the medical literature for many, many years, and it's also been in the World Health Organization's diagnostic criteria as well.
Right.
So it's slowly swinging back into that, and over time I think it will switch.
I understand the Canadian consensus criteria for diagnosis have achieved prominence.
I was fortunate enough to be asked to be on the expert medical panel. That there were 11 of us from around the world that were asked to come up with a clinical working case definition for ME, the treatment of it, and an approach to basically diagnosing it. And it really has been adopted around the world, and I think it really has stood the test of time now. I think what also has helped is that Dr. Leonard Jason, who is a terrific statistician in Chicago, he has helped to operationalize the definition as well. So I think that it has slowly evolved really from a clinical and is being used as also a research definition as well now. And as a result of it being such a good descriptive definition, they have also come up with a pediatric definition that is based on this definition as well. So it is an international definition because we were from around the world, medical doctors on this panel, but they call it the Canadian definition because it was written here in Canada.
Thank you. I understand our best hope of research in Canada at the moment is the promise they've made to fund research in BC, but it is unrealized.
Well, I think that the BC clinic will be coming on board.
All right.
There is going to be some research. It's my understanding that the research has begun on a preliminary basis.
Really? I think it's a day and a half a week.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. What's the snag there? The funding or regard?
I don't know.
Okay. You know, it's hard to find things to say about an illness that the government is all but unwilling to say exists and certainly unwilling to fund. It leaves you, the professional, and the patients in a position where about the only strength they have is to beseech the politicians.
Well, I think in terms of the length of time that ME has been recognized by the medical community, really, you know, the consensus definition and the CDC definition, they really only came out in the 1980s and the 2003 definition. So, you know, the illness itself per se has been around for, you know, the millennium, but it's been recognized for a very short period of time. So from the perspective of recognition, it's like AIDS was back initially when people were dying and they didn't know what was happening to these people.
I see.
So I think that if you can look at it in that perspective, the difference between how the patients function with ME versus AIDS when they first got sick initially, patients with AIDS initially, this is before drugs, they got sick, they had obvious symptoms ongoing, but normal levels of energy until about the 10th year when they got extremely sick, and they usually died. Compared to ME patients who, when they get sick initially, have the severe fatigue that the patients with AIDS were having on the 10th year.
I see.
So the difference is that the patients with AIDS had 9 years to mobilize some help before they died. The ME patients really don't have that energy to mobilize. And that's a distinct difference. Now, of course, the AIDS patients have drug treatments that are available to them, and they are functioning, some of them, at high levels, and they can manage to work. Still, relatively speaking, the AIDS patient population is much more functional and have less disability, per se, than the ME patients.
Yeah, so closing that gap is a major concern.
Well, I'm hoping that as the research unfolds in ME, that there might be some therapies, including pharmaceutical therapies, that will come along that will help the ME patients, just as they have the AIDS patients.
Are you free to talk about the treatments you've found valuable in your practice?
Well, yes. I think the treatments I have found helpful are really outlined in the book that I wrote for the patients that's called Hope and Help for Chronic Fatigue Syndrome Fibromyalgia. And the reason I wrote the book is because I'm one of the few specialists in Ontario that has a patient population devoted to these illnesses. Right. So I wrote this book to try to help people that could not come to me because I only have so much time in the day, unfortunately. So the kind of treatments that help people are looking at how to support and how to help the patient's symptoms. So it's supportive symptomatic treatment. And usually you start off with patients with ME, with treating difficulties with sleep.
Right.
And treating their difficulties if they have pain. And this is where the fibromyalgia patient population have a big overlap because they have sleep problems and pain problems too. And then the third approach that I think is so helpful is learning to pace. And as you know, pacing your activities and rest is an easy concept, but it takes a lot of self-discipline and strategies to do that. And that's where using an activity log and actually recording what you're doing and how it's impacting on your body the same day, the next day, the following day. So it's a self-awareness really helps. And by resting, I mean lying down, eyes shut, either sleeping or meditating. So it's a way to restore the body.
All right. As a patient myself with ME, it was originally recommended to me to keep a Ho-Yen chart. You may have been the doctor to recommend it. If I Google Ho-Yen, do I come up with the chart and the value of keeping it?
Yes. Yes, I probably did recommend that because that was early on. As a result of working with many patients, I came up with the next sort of generation of that chart, and I call it an activity log.
Okay.
And an activity log really is a blank daily planner, and it has time slots from early in the morning to late at night, and it goes from Monday through Sunday. So you could actually just buy a regular blank planner and use that. If you want to Google it, you can go under the Ontario College of Family Physicians,
yeah,
OCFP, their website. And if you go under publications, and then you'd have to look under environment and health. The activity logs and the functional capacity scale are available for free downloads, and I would encourage anybody who's interested to copy it from my book. It's in there as well, and just enlarge it.
Very valuable. What would you like to say to cap this discussion for people who are either unfamiliar or have but don't have resources to deal with ME?
Well, I think for the patients who have the illness and who do not have a diagnosis, I would urge them to ask their doctor to refer them to the environmental health clinic at Women's College Hospital. At least there, they would get a diagnosis and some educational guidance as to how to help themselves and things that would help their doctor to help them as well. The phone number there is 416-351-3764.
416-351-3764.
Yes, and they could get a referral there because I think, to me, diagnosis is the most important thing. You have to know what you have so to begin to understand the kinds of treatments that you need. So I think the diagnosis is so important. And I think for people, if you have somebody in your family that has one of these illnesses, I think if you could possibly read the chapter on pacing and really try to encourage the family member or friend to try to pace. And what I have patients do is I have them try to keep the activity log, but I also have to have them self-monitor by asking themselves, body, in this moment, what do I need? And the body will tell you whether you need an activity or rest. Then you ask the body, how many minutes can I do this for? Either the activity or the rest. And scroll through the five times table, and your body will tell you. And then the third thing you need to do to keep yourself on track, you need to set an external little mini timer. Because your body, as a result of having ME or FM, has lost its linear sense of time.
Really?
You don't know when to stop. And as a result, when you get doing something that you, particularly when you enjoy doing it, you get into that groove of doing it, and you just exceed that limit every single time because you have no sense of linear time.
Really?
So it's really helpful if you set a little mini timer, honor your body, stop when it needs to, and then after the activity, ask it what it needs to do next. It might say, you need a glass of water. It might need to say, a rest. But if you continue to do that, it really makes a huge difference in many people.
Yeah, I would add to self-awareness, I would add self-acceptance too.
Absolutely. And I think with this illness, it's like any other chronic illness. People go through the five emotional stages of illness, like Kubler-Ross had defined for patients who are dying with cancer. You know, denial, you know, bargaining, depression, anger, all those different things. You don't go through them one step at a time, but you bounce around in them. And I think ultimately, if you can get to the acceptance of love level, I think it's much healthier for you, but it means you have to do the work to get there. And acceptance does not mean giving up, not at all. It means having hope that things will improve, but learning to enjoy the things that you can. And one of the things I find really helpful for people, especially if you're bedridden, and a number of people listening to this program may be bedridden, is I would ask you to write out 10 things you're grateful for. Because I think if you can remember those things, it really helps you get through the dark nights when you're having difficulty sleeping and difficulty coping. Things like enjoying watching the sunrise, or enjoying watching the birds at a bird feeder, enjoying your favorite TV show, enjoying, you know, watching your kids or interacting with your kids in whatever way you can. So all these little things are what make life enjoyable. So it's learning to remember the little things and enjoy the moments, because moment to moment is really what we have.
Wonderful advice, in my opinion. I hope the listener feels the same way. Thank you very much for your time today to talk about this with us. I know how valuable that time can be.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And I just want to let you know that the people who are out there, that you are constantly on my mind, and we're working very hard, the doctors who work at the Environmental Health Clinic, to try to improve your lives so you're not forgotten.
Thanks again, Allison.
Okay. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
You've been listening to Dr. Allison Vested, ME clinician and researcher, talk to us about the need for more education, treatment, and research in Ontario. Ray Bonneville is going to do the honors for us on this show. The first cut, I Been a Train.
I've been a train with no destination, never pull into the station, I always took a long way around. A train, I used to think it was true, made out of steel homebrew. Trains can derail and fall off the tracks in a fire. There ain't no way to see what's around the bend in time. I've been a train, feeling scared is true, trying to get closer to you, but not knowing. tracks in a pine. Ain't no way to see what's around the bend in time. I've been trained, you might have heard that song, passing through your town, never slowing down. Slowing down.
Disrespect introduces Katie. She's an advocate. She has ME. She's a former nurse. She's also a former bicyclist and a former marathon runner. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. How are you an advocate, Katie?
Well, the job of advocate came to me as I got ill 3 years ago with ME, and I've realized that there was not much in terms of healthcare here in Canada, and that there was a lot of need for patients to be represented and represented to the government, especially. Gradually I have, become louder to the government and express the needs that we have in terms of healthcare.
Oh, very good. I understand we're having an ME Day sit-in in the legislature in Ontario today. Do you have anything like that going on in BC?
Not that I know of. Understand that the government has issued a proclamation of ME Awareness Day.
And what day did they choose?
It's ME the 12th.
12th, okay.
Which is the International ME Awareness Day.
Yeah.
In terms of activity, I am not sure there is a lot of people that are currently sick. So it's hard to get together. It's hard to organize things. And it sounds like for me, I'll be doing advocacy from my bed.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. And you have a blog, which our listener would like to hear about and follow, I'm sure.
I do have a blog. I had a blog, actually, from my bicycle tourist days.
Right.
I revived that blog when I started my treatments. I'm actually going to a doctor in San Francisco and get some treatments with a drug called rituximab.
Right.
And in people, it's very new, and people are very curious about it. And I decided to revive that blog and to tell my story very publicly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did read it, and it is interesting, and there is humor and determination in it, which I think is important for anybody with ME, and
yeah,
important for the listeners to catch on to and absorb.
It's, I want this blog to send a message to the government that it is not okay to ignore us in Canada and to ignore this disease. There's over 411,000 of us in Canada with basically no health care. And for me, going to the States is a little bit like the patients with multiple sclerosis going for liberation therapy out of country.
Yeah.
I have spent so much energy last year writing to rheumatologists and ask them if they would either research and do a clinical trials with rituximab for ME patients. I basically sent about 14 or 15 letters to rheumatologist associations, and rheumatologists have received 3 answers back that were, plain no.
Really?
And, I decided to move forward with that, and I learned that a doctor in San Francisco was offering it, and I want to be very, very public about it. Patients with ME are just as disabled as patients with end-stage AIDS, progressive MS, or congestive heart failure, but we have no health care whatsoever here.
Yeah.
So we deserve treatments, right. And we deserve clinical trials, and we deserve research, which we have none of that in Canada.
I think it was Alison Bested who explained to me that AIDS patients had, in the beginning, a 10-year window between getting the disease and becoming incapacitated when they could advocate for themselves and for other people with AIDS. But patients with ME are felled right away, aren't they?
I can tell a little bit about my story, and maybe it talks from other people too, is I got sick with EBV, which is Epstein-Barr virus, and my workplace is just telling me I should be able to return to work in 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
And it did not happen. I attempted a return to work, and, you know, it did not work, and it was discouraging. And then I had another return to work, and then I had a gallbladder issue, which,
really?
You know, I hear is very common with our population.
Oh, really?
My gallbladder became necrotic.
Okay.
Like, I had terrible pain. I was very sick and hospitalized for 2 weeks. Had my gallbladder removed the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
And my symptoms gradually started to show up, like ME symptoms, especially the autonomic nervous system, where I am intolerant to stand up or to sit up even.
Really?
So that happened gradually.
Yeah.
So it took maybe a good month, 10 months, to realize that I was sick with ME.
Yeah.
But for my doctor, it took her a good 2 years to realize that I was sick with ME.
Yeah.
I had to convince her. And it was from my research that, I realized that I was sick with an illness that no doctors here basically recognize. Or know what to do with that.
Right. And this, despite the BC government's declaration that's going to establish a clinic, which apparently in part-time work it has.
Yes.
But this is not enough to...
Well, I think that the clinic started, thankfully, with a man that he started having an interest for this disease.
Oh, good.
Especially after the community health survey results from 2010.
And tell us about the community health survey results.
What happened is the government issued a community health survey, I think it's every year, but they had questions pertaining to ME and fibromyalgia in 2005 and in 2010.
Okay.
So it's not every year.
All right.
But in 2010, it revealed that there is 411,000 plus people with ME.
Right.
But there is 23% more than 2005.
Oh, and did they survey doctors or did they survey patients or both?
They surveyed patients.
Okay. All right.
And it's apparently one of the best way to find out how many patients or the statistics about chronic diseases.
Right.
So it's very well respected in Canada. However, with that 23% increase of patients in ME over 5 years, I cannot have an answer from the government as to what are they doing about it.
Yeah.
The only thing we know, is this going to be a new question in the community health survey in 2014?
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, if there was an increase like that for AIDS patients, the government would give so many $100 million in research in epidemiology and, care for these patients.
And
this is not happening for us.
And I understand, I don't want to be melodramatic about chronic fatigue syndrome, but I understand chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME, can kill.
Yes. People die, and it, you know, it is not necessarily recorded as dying of ME.
Right.
Unfortunately. But people have cancer, heart diseases, and suicide. And suicide is because there is basically no health care for them.
Right.
People are at home. Some of them do not dare going to their doctor again because they're going to face again the same neglect and mistreatments and not being recognized that they are really ill. And that's very frustrating.
It must be hard to find a new doctor when you're that sick, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, in British Columbia, we face a lack of GP. It's probably like that all around the country. Finding a new GP is really hard. And specialists who treat is twice as hard, you know. There is only a handful of them. My specialist here in Canada is well over retired. He's in his 80s for
wow.
sure.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then here in BC, we're waiting for the clinic. It's been, we've had an announcement last March of 2011 that a clinic would open, and we're still waiting for it, and we don't have, you know, timeline quite as yet. We're, you know, as much as we're excited about the clinic right now, I think that the patients are very anxious to get access to competent healthcare and access to hopefully down the road clinical trials.
We have a clinic. I learned yesterday from Allison Bested about set up with the determination and the perseverance of Women's College Hospital in Toronto. But for a province like BC, for a province the size of Ontario or BC, you know, one clinic in the bottom center of the province is not really enough.
It's not enough. And you know, the access to that clinic, like this clinic will be in Vancouver, but you have people from all around the province and even Yukon territory.
Right.
That need care, and you know, it's probably the same from Ontario. Like, some patients are bedridden and they cannot travel.
Yeah, well, access from places like Thunder Bay and Kenora to Toronto is not so hot. There's no rail service. It's either you pay plane fare or you get somebody to drive you down.
Yeah.
What's it like in the interior of BC? Is there any kind of understanding of ME there, or is it just what you might expect, that being removed from the research centers, that the treatment deteriorates the farther you get from Vancouver?
Well, there is no treatment here
right.
in Vancouver, so I can't imagine what it's like to live in a remote area.
Okay.
But I am in contact with people from the interior, and everybody is really frantic, whether you're from a remote area or from your, you know, the city. There is no care. Like, you can actually, my specialist is basically holding my hand.
Right.
And if he's done a great job holding my hand, and he's done a great job helping me with my disability application and proof of disability and whatnot. But we need treatments just the same way that AIDS patients have treatments, cancer patients have treatments, diabetes, MS. You know, like, one of the problems that we encounter for this disease is that there is no specialty attached to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you try to, well, your family, my family, or our family physicians will not be able to take the time. They don't have time. And they don't necessarily have the knowledge either, or the interest to have that knowledge.
Mm.
So that's a problem.
Yeah.
Then, you know, what doctor, specialist, will take care of you? And rheumatologists are not necessarily willing to.
Yeah.
Like, I went around. I've done, you know, rheumatologists, I've done respirologists and cardiologists, goodness, neurologists, and they don't know the disease, and I don't think they feel it's their scope of practice.
My.
So that's a big problem for 411,000 people in Canada who do not have health care.
Just a minute then. From the symptomology, it would seem a good fit with rheumatology, but from the speculation around the research, it would seem a better fit with neurology. And the result is just, it's like a hot potato.
It's a big hot potato. There's been a paper just that came out recently about Ontario rheumatologists who have been surveyed about fibromyalgia. So right now, they take care of patients with fibromyalgia.
Okay.
And they've been asked whether they should still care for them. And the majority of them are saying no.
In Ontario?
In Ontario.
All right.
And they say that these patients should go back to their family doctor, and their family doctor should manage them.
Right.
Now, fibromyalgia is a neurological illness.
Right.
And neurologists don't want to take care of them.
Yeah.
So,
well, in
so
pain,
here you
pain
go,
clinics
you have another 400,000 people with fibromyalgia who would have just family doctor care and no specialized care. And you know, not likely to have clinical trials or research done on them.
Yeah.
There is no research in Canada. Well, I would speak for ME. I'm not. This is probably a little more for fibromyalgia, but there is no research whatsoever for ME.
Let's take a short break from Katie. I'm sure she'll enjoy it. String Bean and the Stalkers. Cold, hard rain. You've been listening to Katie, author of BiteChick06.blogspot.ca, Rituximab Tourist. Talk to us about the ME situation in BC and across Canada.
Our province, I would say fibro and ME, probably something like 80,000. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's for sure.
you know, like these diseases, there's more people from these diseases. There's people with AIDS, then there is people with MS, you know, definitely more. But the budget for research from Canada is like basically zero.
Yeah.
And these are complex diseases, and like you mentioned, they are neurological and immunological illness.
Yeah.
And the treatment I'm pursuing right now is rituximab.
Yeah.
And this is a drug that rheumatologists give for rheumatoid arthritis patients.
Yeah, you explained to me how it resets the immune system, which was an amazing story.
That's right. It's actually a chemo agent that they gave also to a lymphoma patient. And it's a medication that targets the B cells. They're immune cells that produce antibodies.
Okay.
And so it kills these cells, and that's believed that it resets the immune system, just like a computer you would do Control-Alt-Delete.
Right.
To reboot your computer. Well, it's believed that it's going to reboot the immune system.
I see.
But family doctors cannot prescribe this drug.
Okay. Right. Okay.
You know, rheumatologists can, and like I asked last year to them whether they would give it, and you know, actually one answer was I have no interest to, and you know, like, and I don't have time.
Okay.
So that's the one of the answer I got from a rheumatologist.
So you need an oncologist, basically.
And oncologists, like in British Columbia, oncologists work at a cancer agency.
Sure.
And they are not to take patients with other diseases. They treat strictly cancer.
When you say they are not to, you mean they prefer not to, or they have been ordered not to, or?
Well, the cancer agency, and I know that because I'm working in the cancer agency, or I was working as a nurse at the cancer agency. These doctors are on salary, working for the cancer agency, and the cancer agency does not see patients that do not have cancer.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a little different in Ontario. If an oncologist expresses an interest in a symptom, he can prescribe to alleviate it, and he can diagnose to establish that it exists. I don't know how far he can go in that direction.
Yeah.
But it actually was an oncologist who diagnosed my candida. I mean, we knew I had candida yeast.
Yeah.
But it was an oncologist who produced a test. Even the test was ambiguously interpreted. Some people said, well, you know, that's a healthy immune response. This person can't have candida. And the other one said, yeah, that's a healthy immune response. He must have a lot of candida. So, you know, it depends on the doctor you get. What about naturopaths and herbal doctors? Even Chinese medicine doctors.
I don't have knowledge with that. Like, this is certainly not my path of treatment.
Okay.
So I can't talk about that.
All right. So it's not one that you've followed, and that's why you've been to seek out someone who will administer rituximab. Tell us how it's going, because, you know, I've read the blog, but the listener hasn't read the blog and needs to be encouraged to read the blog so that they can follow it too.
Yeah. It was a journey that started when my LTD has been approved, my long-term disability has been approved at the end of December.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew of this doctor that was offering rituximab.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 2 weeks only to have an appointment with him.
Oh, very good.
So that went pretty fast.
Oh,
and
good.
So that led me in January to meet him and to mention to him, like, this is the drug I'm interested in, and this is why I think it's going to work for me.
Okay.
So I was pretty, you know, pretty certain that this is what I wanted. This is a drug that has, you know, fairly potentially severe side effects.
Okay.
You need to be aware of that.
Right.
Because it basically takes half of your system, your immune system away. So you're at risk of very dangerous infections.
Okay.
So I started, like, the drug is by itself is $6,000 a dose.
Oh, no.
So it's very expensive.
Right.
So from January to April, it took that long for me to get patient assistance approval from the drug company.
Okay.
So the drug is covered for me. I'm so thankful.
Right. Is the drug company interested? Is Genentech interested in fibro and ME?
This is not a question for me. I think it would be a question for my doctor.
Okay.
But he seems to have a way to talk to the company. But, you know, it's to the advantage of the company to be interested because there's so many of us with the disease.
Yeah.
And we have, according to that study from Norway, some very good, it shows good promise.
Yeah, you mentioned the name of the doctors who'd done the study in Norway, too. One was Sluge, right? S-L-U-G-E?
Sluge and Mella. And they actually are both oncologists. And it was a patient with ME that had also cancer that received quite a few chemo agents for her cancer.
Okay.
And then once everything was done and she was basically cured or in remission from her cancer, she went back to her doctor and said, I want more chemo because it helps my ME.
All right.
So in the end, I've received so far two doses,
mm-hmm.
and they were 2 weeks apart. And my next rituximab dose is in June. And I am still waiting for effects because it takes a little while to kick in.
Okay.
And they told me in between 2 to 10 months to start feeling positive effects from the drug.
Oh, I see. That's what you mean by kick in. Yeah.
Yes. So right now...
2 to 10 months then to rebuild your immune system too?
Yes, I will very likely be immunocompromised for all that time. But we will give more rituximab so that will keep it down. Our disease, it may be a good thing because our system, the immune system, is overactivated.
Okay, all right.
So
you'll get these treatments periodically and indefinitely?
I don't know for how long. It might be a year, might be 2 years.
Okay.
You know, because it is still fairly experimental for our disease, we just wait and see.
So there might
be some other drugs coming along. It sounds like I've just received some fresh news from Norway, and that's on my recent blog. There's another rheumatology drug that is in the works for clinical trial for ME patients, and it's going to be Enbrel.
Enbrel?
Enbrel.
Enbrel. Enbrel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what stage is it at?
You know, I don't think they have started clinical trials yet.
Okay.
But it's the same doctors in Norway
Does it work the same way?
Leading the field.
Does it work the same way?
They think it's working a little different. My memory is not great right now.
Join the club, yeah.
Very foggy.
Yeah, okay.
But it's on my blog, latest blog post.
Well, maybe it's time to give the address for your blog.
Yes. It's...
bikechick06.blogspot.ca.
That's correct.
All right.
You can Google bikechick06 and you'll find it.
Oh, good.
You can Google rituximab and MECFS, you'll find it.
Oh, good.
Or KD rituximab, and it's KATI.
All right.
Rituximab, and you'll find it.
Okay. Well, I should mention at this point that we're grateful for Pandora in Alabama for putting us in touch with you and getting us information and you know, creating the privilege of reading your blog as you go.
Thank you. I also have a petition going.
Yeah, you have about 4, I noticed, on the site.
Yes, the petition I started will end up soon, so I'm, you know, very keen to pass this on.
All right.
And it's to ask the Minister of Health of Canada to fund research for patients with ME.
All right.
And to actually encourage the doctor to rethink their structure you know, when it comes to ME, whether they need to start a new medical specialty or to include ME into one of the specialty would be important. But they also need to start educating their medical students properly.
Yeah, and currently practicing doctors, too.
Oh, that, you know, that would be a dream.
Yeah.
That, you know, there has been last year an international conference just in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And I have invited all the doctors I could, basically, because they have to come from experts and,
okay.
and from in the field
yeah.
to share the experience
and, so
and to share their experience and to share what the disease is all about.
Were you successful in getting these doctors to the conference?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right.
I actually don't know how many from Canada went, and I don't have these numbers. There were a few.
We did interview one from the States, but I think he thought he was in Montreal. When he attended,
But the one doctor that is part of the clinic in Vancouver has attended.
Oh, good.
And that's important, yes.
Was that the man that you spoke about who was interested in ME and started the clinic?
Exactly, that's Dr. David Patrick.
Oh, very
and
good.
He's an epidemiologist, and it's very exciting to see someone new into our field.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't happen every day.
No.
And when someone new comes to our field, it brings new ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And that's important, too. Like, for instance, Dr. Mella and Fluge, who has their expertise in rituximab, and they have something new to bring to the table. And, you know, it's also the case to my doctor in San Francisco, who's an infectious disease doctor.
Okay.
So that brings different expertises because our disease is so complicated.
Yeah.
You need everybody.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap to conclude the interview?
I think we have gone around. One of the things that I'd like to mention is the recently the Canadian government announced $100 billion funding for brain research.
Okay.
And we were not included.
So who's
ME
the minister?
Is not included, and fibromyalgia is not included.
Who's the minister?
Pardon me?
Who's the minister?
Dr. Leona Aglukkaq.
Okay.
Is the Canadian health minister. And that was so disappointing because my petition has been going on for quite a few months now, and I've sent her a letter, an advocacy letter with a package with, you know, many papers.
Right.
And the community health survey.
Right.
Which she has not answered.
Oh.
But that $100 million funding for brain disease.
$100 million.
Yes.
Okay.
And we are not included. Like,
yeah.
We were not listed as the different diseases that they would cover.
Your advice then would be keep those cards and letters coming, folks, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And find a petition and write to the government, write to your MLA.
All right.
We need to have research done. We need to have clinical trials. And we need competent doctors.
Very good. Well, I appreciate the time you spent with me today. We'll air this 2 days from now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
All right, Katie.
Okay.
You've been listening to Katie, author of BiteChick06, .blogspot.ca, Rituximab Tourist. Talk to us about the ME situation in BC and across Canada. If you want to find out more, don't forget Alison Bested's book, Hope and Help for Chronic Fatigue and Fibromyalgia. And now to get us home, Ray Bonneville, Who's Talking to Me?
I felt
the ghost of trouble leaving town. A back drive rumbled on a silver greyhound. Can't say for sure now, looking back, about a strange new feeling that I had. A voice said, "Mate, get your things, get up out of them old box springs. Got somewhere to go, you ain't been there before. There's some kind of thirst for something more. Who's there? Who's there talking to me? Who's there? Who's there talking to me? Who's there talking to me?" The sign said, "This is where the road ends." On the backside it read, "It's where it begins." I walked into a painting about a stunned old. Nobody was waiting, I kept on going. I took clear water from an old stone well. Up from the bottom came the voice again. Who's there? Who's there talking to me? Who's there? Who's there talking to me? Who's there talking to me? Was a road to here, I can tell. It's almost overgrown, but not quite yet. Bracken tangle around my feet. Nighttime falling, it's getting hard to see. I pass by a graveyard while headed east. Everybody there was resting in peace. So thank you very much, whoever you are, for letting a fool such as me get this far. Who's there? Who's there talking to me? Who's there? Who's there talking to me? Who's there talking to me? Who's there talking to me? Who's there talking to me?
This is Disrespect Radio. I think you're here instead of listening to commercial radio because you want to. Well, something funny, I'm here because I want to too. All our hosts on community radio are unpaid volunteers. Our management takes less than scale, so they must want to too. Our guests, they have to want to as well. They're not looking for the big endorsement. They're not looking for big bucks. They're here because they want to talk to you, the CFMU listener. We're simulcast around the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And we're also podcast back 6 or 7 years at this time. We're archived at radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can reach the show at disrespect@lycos.com. Come back at showtime next week on CFMU 93.3 on your radio at 12 noon on Thursdays. You know you want to.